Welcome to Basic Black. Some of you are joining us on our broadcast and others of you are joining us on our digital platforms. I'm Callie Crossley, host of Under the Radar 89.7. Tonight, food justice in the community. We, like you, are dealing with the effects of the coronavirus pandemic and are taking precautions. We are working with limited staff and our guests are joining us remotely. One-third of Black Massachusetts families and one in four of Latinx families can't be certain about where they'll get their next meals. Their neighborhoods are most likely to have many fast food restaurants and least likely to have a nearby grocery store, often the result of racist commercial zoning. Food justice activists are organizing to help communities of color grow fresh produce, and they are working with Mayor Michelle Wu's administration as part of a new initiative which would make healthy, culturally relevant foods affordable. How can the food justice movement help communities of color slow the rise of food insecurity, which the pandemic made worse? Joining us remotely, Patricia Spence, President and CEO of the Urban Farming Institute in Dorchester. Vivian Morris, registered dietitian and founder of the Mattapan Food and Fitness Coalition. Hae-In Kim, deputy director of planning and development for the Mayor's Office of Food Justice in Boston. And Cassandria Campbell, co-founder, Fresh Food Generation. Welcome to all of you. So Hae-In, I'm going to start with you because I had not heard the term food justice until getting ready for this conversation. So the last conversation I had about food and access and its impact on communities of color, we were talking about food deserts. But food justice really addresses a broader, more expansive take on how to connect communities of color with access to healthy foods. So tell me about what that means and then how the mayor's office is working to address that.
Sure, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on today. So food justice at its core is really the basic right for everyone to have access to culturally relevant and healthy foods. It's a place where racial justice, economic justice, and environmental justice intersect. Our office is working continuing to work on supporting food access work, supporting local food economies, but also work with Grow Boston, Boston's new urban ag office, to think about how to promote sustainable and local food production. So it's a multi-layered approach, but we are really looking forward to the work.
Give me one specific example of what that means on the ground.
Yeah, on the ground, I think we did a pilot around raised beds last year where we are working with five local farmers to build raised beds for low-income families. So food justice is thinking about how and where that food is produced and also who is receiving on the receiving end of that food production.
Okay. Vivian Morris, you've been talking about food equity for a long time, and I'd like to get your take on food justice. How do you see it operating on the ground?
Well, food justice is something that we've been advocating for, but that's been part of the struggle of all low-income families, and particularly families of color in this country from the beginning. Right now, what we've been trying to focus on is helping people to have both a better understanding of what healthy foods are, but also to appreciate those cultural foods that are part of their traditions that are very good for them, healthy for them, and how to have them both accessible and affordable, including how to grow your own.
Mm-hmm. All right, Cassandria, pick up from there.
That's extremely important to us as well. We have a restaurant in the Codman Square area, not too far from the Urban Farming Institute. And we try to really focus on culturally relevant, healthy foods. So for example, during the summertime, we get our collards from the Urban Farming Institute. We cook it with very healthy processes and we serve it up at our restaurant at an affordable price.
Okay. Patricia, you're with the Urban Farm Institute, and you've already said that a collard grown out, coming right out of the ground and immediately going to somebody is way different from what I could get at the grocery store.
And our key in the area of food justice is certainly to grow the freshest possible food, like those collard greens, in our community. And not only that, but to teach our community how to grow their own food. So you're either accessing it at a farm stand, be it Vivian's or be it the Urban Farming Institutes, or you're teaching children in Boston Public Schools how to grow. You're building raised beds in backyards. We will have built about 100 by the end of the spring. It's all about access. But the key for us is not just access for food, fresh food, but the freshest possible food that you might not be able to get at a store if you have a store nearby. Mm-hmm. So it's about access and actually taking control of the food process in our communities. And I will add, it's so important to say, doing it in partnership with the very people that are on today.
Okay, great.
Critically important. We actually have a meal bag program that we started in the pandemic. And who did we go to provide those meals for us? Fresh Food Generation. So, and who helped us distribute? Mattapan Food and Fitness. So we're all working in partnership and absolutely with the city of Boston as well.
And as I understand it, somebody from one of your graduates or somebody that worked with you is now in the mayor's office or working with the mayor's office.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Grow Boston. I'm not sure who you're referencing.
Yes.
Grow Boston. But that's the importance of this movement. She managed a farm. She knows exactly the importance of what we're doing. She actually served as a board member as well with UFI. And now she's continuing on that same theme of how can we create more access to land so that not only the community can be stewards of our own land, but we can grow the freshest possible produce, again, in partnership with everybody here today.
All right. I want to unpack a lot of what you all have laid on the table, but I first want to put this in some context. So the Consumer Price Index just announced this week what the price index was looking like for groceries for everybody right now. And I don't need to tell you that inflation has driven up the prices immensely. It's 8.8% higher in March, which the last time they have stats for, than it was a year ago. And they're already saying that this is going to go up the rest of the year. And it's gone up in every sector. So in other words, meat is more expensive, more expensive than fish and seafood. Same thing for dairy, same thing for produce. So we're in a context where it's expensive for everyone, and in communities of color that have already suffered a lack of access now, and by the way, slower to come out from the impact of hunger during the pandemic, this is quite, it's an inflection point, as everybody has said, right? We have to move forward taking control in many ways. So let me go back to you, Cassandra, and talk about why what you're doing with Fresh Food Generation is really demonstrating that you can get a grip and move in a different direction and get some of this fresh food that is culturally relevant in the neighborhoods that need it most.
Yeah, as a food business, we have been severely impacted by the pandemic, and we have seen inflation in food prices. And we have had to be creative about how we go about that approach. And so one of the strategies that has worked for us is working with local farmers and local partners who really understand the importance of making sure that people can walk down the street in their neighborhood, whether or not they're low income or making above 100K, and get something that's healthy and access it. And so during the pandemic, we found that the best partners were our local farms, and we started working with the Urban Farming Institute, who also has a commitment to make sure that all the produce that they're providing is affordable. So incorporating that into our menu allows us to keep prices down and serve it at an affordable rate to our community.
And let's pick up on the culturally relevant, which I want all of you to touch on. In your team, Cassandra, you have folks from across the diaspora of the Caribbean. So you're looking to create healthy foods that are using very familiar kinds of food items to people from these immigrant communities and Black communities?
Yeah, two of our best-selling items is our empanadas, and they are filled with, you know, ingredients sourced from local farms, meat that's quality. So for example, we have grass-fed beef. It just tastes different. It's better for your body, right? The ingredients in our veggie empanada taste different because it's grown in soil that's richer and has better nutrient contents in it. So it's really important to us that we turn something like an empanada that's really familiar to people into something that can be really healthy for people. Our next best-selling item is our jerk chicken. Turns out you can get all the ingredients to make jerk sauce in New England, right? So scallions, habaneros, onions, we're able to get that from the Food Project and make it in big batches for 400 people at a time and freeze it so that we have it over the winter to be able to cook our chicken in. Mm-hmm.
And Patricia, I love your story about going out and seeing something in a wheelbarrow that somebody thought was weeds, and guess what? It wasn't.
Well, they'll still call it weeds, but it's amaranth. It's actually callaloo. So my family's from Jamaica. That's the green, opposed to, for example, a collard green. We really use a lot of callaloo. And that day when I saw it at the beginning of my work with UFI, they finally said, oh, just take the two wheelbarrows. Took them home to my elder mom, and she cleaned them all up and called all her elder Jamaican friends over. I've got free callaloo. And at that point, you know, in talking with our farmers, I said, this is a great market. You can't get this stuff easily. And so now that's one of our biggest sellers at our Friday farm stands, callaloo. And then also we're growing the things that go with it. I mean, thyme, again, for if you're a West Indian, thyme is an important ingredient. So we're basically growing lots of things that are connected with different cultural recipes.
And for me, okra, I'm from the South, but mm-hmm. okra, you also say, is very relevant for Haitian Americans.
Well, eggplant and okra, and Kathy, I have to say, we had 8 foot tall okra. If you've seen okra before, we're not sure why it was that tall, but we had just a ton of okra last year, and it went as fast as we could pick it. So that is certainly another key crop for the areas of Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan, our focus.
Back over to you, Vivian, about this culturally mm-hmm. relevant food. So it's culturally relevant that people can recognize, but sometimes it takes them a minute. You're a registered dietitian, so you know this, mm-hmm. to become accustomed to its preparation in a healthier way. But you can change people's minds over time, as I understand.
Right. And I guess I would say that historically, the food that was cooked by people of color, and again, I'm also historically from the South and grew up there before moving to Boston. People did both grow food in a really wonderful and healthy way, but they also cooked it in a healthy way. And there's been this movement about how we historically recognize even the diets of Blacks in the South. You know, things like fried chicken were something that were eaten occasionally, right? But a lot of the times we ate beans with rice, right? So we got our protein largely from plants historically. And then occasionally we would also have things that maybe had a little bit more fat in them. Again, so I don't want us to have this view that our historical diets were unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Actually, the further you go back, our diets were healthier than they are now. And what we need now is actually more sharing of basic knowledge about healthy cooking. And that's one of the things that we're doing with Mattapan Food and Fitness Coalition, working with other groups like Bond of Color, Boston Organization of Nutritionists and Dietitians of Color, to do more basic teaching to both young people and people of all ages about healthier ways to make that same food that we love, but do it so that there's, you know, less added fat, less salt, other things that make those wonderful fruits and vegetables and peas and other things taste really good, but be as healthy as possible.
And Heyann, one of the things that the Mayor Wu's office in the larger office and Grow Boston are both doing are working with young people around some of these issues. But also I wanted to talk to you about some policy that can potentially make a better space for more empowerment in communities of color and less intrusion by some of the entities that have been there forever with unhealthy food. So there is a policy coming out of the Wu administration that says you cannot build certain kinds of fast food restaurants in poorer neighborhoods. Talk about why this is important as we're talking about food justice.
Thanks so much for that question. I think physical access to food is a really big part of food justice. We know that historic policies have disenfranchised communities of color and made it hard for those communities to physically access grocery stores or get to places in their neighborhood that where their healthy food is available. So it's really important to have that kind of framing when we're talking about food justice, because it's about education and it's about encouraging food production, but also thinking about the structural factors that we need to address in order to meet the needs of our communities.
And when you are able to put some teeth behind keeping out certain stores or institutions in the past that have not led to actually access. I mean, maybe you can access some chips, but you can't access the kind of food that we're talking about here that's culturally relevant, affordable, and good for you. It makes a difference to have some policies that the community can stand behind and say, no, that's you're not going to build here.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't speak to that specific policy, but yes, I agree that For a long time, advocates have been advocating for healthy produce in their neighborhoods. Our office right now works with local corner stores through our Double Up Food Bucks program. We work with bodegas to increase the amount of fruits and vegetables that recipients are able to purchase with SNAP. And so that has been a way we started to bring culturally relevant and affordable fresh food to local neighborhoods. But yes, there's a lot of room in the future to continue doing that work.
One of the things, Patricia, that that you have spoken about is that part of the access piece is also economic in a different way. That if you are, as you are, with the Urban Farm Institute, training people to be farmers, that's actually a job. And can be many jobs in the community. So you're getting a win-win, possibly win, three wins at the same time. You have 285 graduates. Tell me what they are doing and how their skills from what they've learned with you have made a difference.
Well, number one, you're creating an ecosystem of folks that are wonderful stewards of land, folks that are growing food, and then having the capability to work at a Commonwealth Kitchen or a Fresh Food Generation or a World Farmers or an Allendale Farm. And so that's what we're creating. And not only that, but it's important not just to do that training, but then bring those folks back to the Urban Farming Institute as well. Of a staff of around 11 to 12 right now, I think about at least six people have gone through our training program. Mm. The first picture you showed was of McDee, and he started with the first urban farmer training class in 2013. He still is working with us right now. And folks also go on to, you know, again, become definitely urban farmers, but they're all growing. They're in schools. They're teaching rooftop farming. They might be teaching children in the back of the school how to grow. And then UFI will come in and build raised beds. So it truly is that system that we're creating. And again, all the folks here on the panel, we're all working together and building more and more and more opportunities. Vivian Morris is doing the same. Cassandria is doing the same. And we're, again, elevating our community and being able to teach other people. The teachers become the teachers.
Let me ask you a question, Patricia, before I move on to some of my other guests. What's the difference between an urban farm parcel, because you have several around the city, that's, you know, professional, that's how my description of it, than something I might make in my yard? I wouldn't, I'm not a gardener, but you get my point. What's the difference?
It's we're growing to sell. It's commercial. We're growing to sell, opposed to just gardening.
Okay.
But in what we do, we are also, as we have our backyard raised bed program, we are certainly teaching the community to grow their own food as well.
Okay.
It's great when you come to the farm stand, but let's teach you how to do it.
Cassandra, I am taken with your story about really how you got started, thinking, coming out one day, walking around Roxbury and saying, why is it that there's all this stuff here of, you know, all the kind of regular fast food restaurants I can see most anywhere, but they're clustered in my community and they're not other options. Talk to me about that sort of transformational moment. Yes.
Fresh Regeneration started in 2015, and I always say that it was very self-serving, right? I wanted to live in a neighborhood where I could walk down the street and get something healthy to eat. I was noticing that every time I wanted to eat healthy, I had to hop in my car and go to another neighborhood. And I know that that's a privilege to have a car, to be able to know that there's other healthier options in other places. And I really just want to make sure that when I do have kids, they can have the joy of walking down the street and having options. And so in 2015, I think Vivian Morris knows the statistics probably better than anyone else. Mattapan had the highest diabetes, highest obesity rate in the city. If you are an adult living in Mattapan, there was a 30% chance that you were going to be obese. And that has to do with the food opportunities in that neighborhood. And so not only was it, you know, me selfishly wanting to eat healthy foods and wanting it in my own neighborhood, but really wanting people in my community and communities that look like mine to have the opportunity to choose healthier options if that's what they desire.
And health, I just want to emphasize that when we say healthy, it's not like taking medicine. We're talking about really good food that tastes good.
Yes.
That's the importance.
It has to taste good.
Right, exactly.
Before we can have any other conversation.
Right. Vivian, yeah. I just read a recent report. As some may know, we have high rates of dementia in our community as people age, communities of color, but certainly among African Americans, it's rising. And there was a study that said a plant-based diet can actually slow cognitive decline in Black community, in Black adults. That says it all right there, right?
Absolutely. And again, historically, we have always loved plants, yet the portion of our diets that are plant-based has gone down and down and down over the years. And but things that we love, I personally love blueberries, and blueberries have a very positive effect on maintaining cognitive skills and abilities. So, but not just those, you know, almost all of the fruits and vegetables. And again, that's why having that as your normal life and the easy access to them, whether again, it's through, you know, the grocery stores in our community that have more of those, whether it's our farmers markets, whether it's our community gardens, you know, and we're trying to even build places that are totally accessible to everybody. And what we have is a food forest that we are just opening now in Mattapan.
And so, what is that, Vivian? Tell us what that is.
So a food forest is a forest type place with lots of trees, but that also focuses on plant bearing, fruit bearing trees, shrubs, etc. So in ours, we have pear trees, we have pawpaw trees, we have cherry trees, we have blueberry bushes, we have grapevines, and it's totally open to the public. So anybody walking through that neighborhood can come right in. If it's the season when those things are ripe, just pick it and eat it.
Okay. I just wanted to emphasize that there are some programs that people need to know about that SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, long ago changed the policy about being able to be used at farmers markets. So that's very important. But you also say there's some upcoming programs like Summer Eats that communities should know about as well.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to speak on our program. So we have like the double up program I spoke about. We have those SNAP incentive programs as well as HIP, which you just mentioned at farmers markets. We have a program called Boston Eats, which is a summer program that offers free meals to youth under 18 across the city. So we partner with community-based organizations, libraries, other areas where youth congregate, and anyone who's under 18 can come and receive a free meal there. So please look out for that. And if you're interested in being a site, please let us know too.
All right, so you guys have given us some very practical on-the-ground ways of beginning to address this gap. And we're going to continue the conversation on the other side of this, but that's the end of our broadcast and the end of our show right now. Thank you for joining us, and stay with us now as we continue our conversation on our digital platforms, Facebook and YouTube.